children. What are we gonna do to show we care? How are we gonna be there for our children when they feel that life has just not been that fair?
Good evening and welcome back to Masks Weekly Radio Show on Family Matters. Masks, Mothers and Fathers Aligned, Saving Kids. Kids of all ages and all stages for all mental health issues, including addictions. If you know someone that needs a referral or support group, feel free to give them our confidential number, and that is 718-758-0400. We are open from 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. every day, all day Friday, 2 hours before Shabbos, after Shabbos, until 11 p.m., and all day Sunday from 10 to 10. So again, I'll repeat the number. Maybe you want to write it down for yourself, for a loved one, maybe for a neighbor, or someone you sit next to in shul. Our number is 718-758-0400. And if you would like to get a free naloxone kit, which is another form of Narcan for prevention of opioid overdose, feel free to give us a call and we could set up to have you trained. It's a short training. It's an inhaler. There are no side effects when administered. So give us a call. We will get you your free kit. And our number, again, is 718-758-0400. And everyone should have one, maybe not for your own child, maybe for a friend's child, or maybe just somebody that in front of your home or your synagogue, your place of prayer, may pass out from an overdose of opioids, and then you can help save a life. So think about getting a free one for yourself or for your friends, kids. Maybe you want to give them our number. Tonight, I'm very, very honored to have with us a very brave woman, Lizzie Simon, who's a screenwriter and a former Wall Street Journal columnist. And she had written the groundbreaking memoir called Detour, at the young age of 23. In the book, Lizzie traveled across the country to interview young people like herself who were diagnosed then with bipolar but still were thriving. So I would like to welcome you on tonight, Lizzie. Thank you for making the time and coming on to my show.
Thank you so much for having me and for all of the work you do. It's an incredible resource, and it really is very inspiring.
Thank you. So, Lizzie, not everybody hangs out their own dirty laundry. Not everybody is so brave to share their stories and their struggles, especially at a very young age. And you wrote Detour 20 years ago, and in it you shared your struggles as an adolescent with bipolar disorder, and you went ahead and you interviewed other people who were thriving in life despite having mental illness. Excuse me. And it had an enormous impact on readers, their families, and in general how mental illness is discussed in American culture. And why do you think the book had such an impact when, I'm not talking about today, we're so blessed to have Thrive New York City, Mayor de Blasio, First Lady Shirlane McRae started Thrive New York City, and in New York, so many have found treatment for their struggles, for their mental health issues, for depression, anxiety, drugs and alcohol, the opioid crisis. I mean, so many years ago in American culture, it was not something we so easily discussed. So I'm wondering what your feelings as a result of writing the book, what impact it had.
Well, I think what hadn't been done before I wrote the book was we hadn't really heard from a variety of people who were living well with mental illness. So it wasn't, the book Detour isn't just my story. I traveled across the country and interviewed other people, and I think it was really the variety of voices and the variety of experiences that led to the book having an impact, because people who may or may not have related to me would find someone that they could definitely identify with. And then I think, just generally speaking, at least 20 years ago, there were doctors who were experts, but we just didn't hear from people themselves who were dealing with it, coping with it, and coping well. So I think it was a variety of perspectives. I think it was hearing directly from people dealing with it. And then I think it was people who were doing well and who could talk about the, you know, the terrifying aspects of what they've been through, but from the lens of having survived it and having built a fairly stable life for themselves. So I think it was a positive, the overall kind of tone of the book was very positive and gave people who were struggling a reason to identify positively and a reason to be hopeful about their own lives. And I think, you know, the stigma has gotten a lot better over the last 20 years, but it is still out there. And, you know, even the idea that it's dirty laundry, you know, is something I would say, well, why is it dirty laundry? If I had written about having asthma, you know, would it be airing my dirty laundry? Why, when it's having to do with your brain, is it still so taboo and so shameful?
Absolutely. We speak about diabetes. We speak about every other physical ailment, and we should be able to speak about, like you said, anything going on with the brain. So bipolar disorder is a condition that causes periods of severe changes in one's mood, activity levels, energy, ability to carry out everyday tasks, and these changes are commonly called mood disorders. So you wrote about your own story, you wrote about other stories, so I'm sure it's okay for me to dive in a little personal. Of course, you'll answer up until what you want to share, but would you mind sharing how it started for you? At what age?
Sure.
Just so that families understand, because we know that there are millions of Americans affected by bipolar disorder each year, and it often starts in the late teens or early adult years. So would you mind sharing, please?
Sure. No, I'm happy to share. I was diagnosed when I was 17, but I had depression from a very young age. I kept a journal my whole life. I wrote in a journal every single day pretty much until I was about 20, and I have journal entries from when I was, you know, in elementary school about being really depressed. The circumstances of my diagnosis are maybe unique. When I was home for winter break, I became very severely depressed, you know, couldn't really formulate sentences, had no energy, you know, had like sort of endless feelings of doom. And So my parents took me to see a psychiatrist who put me on a medication called Paxil, which has since been found to cause suicidal ideation in when it's given to patients with bipolar disorder. So it was the wrong drug for me, and people can have really nightmarish experiences with pharmaceuticals. They're not, they can be life-saving, and they can be really problematic. And in any case, for me, I got very manic, and then I became psychotic, and eventually was taken back to a psychiatrist who diagnosed me properly and put me on, at the time I was put on lithium. And my, you know, journey began with building a healthy life. I think it was traumatic to go through what I had been through, and it was really hard as a young person. I think one of the struggles, as you said, most people are diagnosed during adolescence, and it's a time when you're cobbling together who you are and what you think is possible for yourself. So for these kind of things to happen during that time, it can feel, you know, life-ending. Whereas now, I mean, I'm in my early 40s, and it just feels like everyone I know has dealt with something major. But when you're 17, you don't really have that kind of perspective. In any case, I was diagnosed, and I, you know, didn't have any, you know, it just took a while for me to come to grips with what it all meant. And writing the book was part of that process.
Very brave. When you were writing the book, how did you recruit the people that you were going to be interviewing?
It's really interesting because I wrote the book before the internet.
Right.
So, like, I feel like if I wrote it today, you know, I'm sure there's Facebook groups and blah, 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 blah. But
right.
I went through personal networks. I went through networks of psychologists and psychiatrists, and I went to support group meetings that were held in different parts of the country. And that's how I ended up with the people that I interviewed. So it was a lot of reporting. I mean, I didn't think of myself as a trained reporter at the time, but absolute reporting is what it is, you know. A lot of reaching out and a lot of showing up, and I don't think I included everybody that I interviewed in the book, but most of them I did.
Mm-hmm. And over the 20 years, so much has changed. And how has it changed for your own personal mental health?
Well, you know, it's interesting. I feel like there's so many ways to answer that. I'm a mom now. I have two little ones. I have a 2-year-old and a 5-year-old, and I have a 17-year-old stepson. And, you know, I've been through a lot with them. Early motherhood isn't easy, but I would say that I've had so many years have gone by without having any kind of major psychiatric, you know, issue, that it's kind of my own, you know, that part of my history has moved kind of to the background. I still deal with anxiety. All of the sleep deprivation from, you know, early motherhood was really hard on me. It's hard on everyone, but and there have been some moments where, you know, I've been, where my anxiety has gotten, you know, really high, or my depression seems to be coming back in, but none of it as dramatically as when I was younger. And, you know, it's different when you're, I don't know, there's something also about, you know, being married and having kids where you're not, nothing can go on for very long without being noticed. So, you know, my husband and I have a deal where if he thinks I'm off, you know, he can bring it up with me. And I agreed to stick in with my psychiatrist if my husband wants me to do that. And that's just how we've, you know, negotiated it. Normally we don't tell each other what to do, or we try not to.
Right.
But in that instance, we sort of have an agreement. So it doesn't, I don't really, of course I still have bipolar disorder. I mean, I have it for life. If you have it, you have it. But I don't, I don't think it's as much part of my, the fabric of my life as maybe anxiety is. And I think the anxieties that I have are not, you know, are not uncommon. You know, it's a pretty anxious time to be alive, and, you know, it's hard to be a working person with kids and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So, yeah, I think I've learned a lot over the years about how to take care of myself, you know, meditation and yoga and, therapy when I need it, and how important it is to be part of communities and to have close friends that I can really share myself with and share my life with. You know, how important exercise is. You know, all of these things, I have a sense of, like, all the things that I need to do to feel stable, and they work, you know, 99% of the time. And I don't think I have, I certainly didn't have that kind of self-awareness or that kind of toolbox when I was 17. So, yeah, I think it's a really different reality, but I'm sure most people who are, you know, would say that about themselves as adults versus
right.
teenagers.
So you bring up exercise, you bring up lack of sleep, being a mom. We all know how hard that is. It's so important that people recognize that when someone suffers with depression, anxiety, they must keep a better schedule than someone that doesn't suffer with it. Because being consistent with sleep, getting enough hours, good meals 3 times a day, exercise, you know, the perfect life like everyone should have, it is so important for someone that struggles with bipolar to recognize they must have good sleep, they must eat well, they must exercise and have a therapist. So that's in order to keep them in a good spirit and feeling good, and not to go into if life throws you, you know, something terrible may happen and the depression just, you know, you spiral out of control. One can go into manic, there's depressive. It depends which way the bipolar affects, you know, the individual person. But did you ever have any manic states?
Yeah, I did. I had periods of, like, you know, of just rapid thinking and giant projects and, you know, the kind of delusions of grandeur that can go on. And, you know, this is, we're talking prior to my diagnosis. And, I guess in my 20s at one point I thought, and this is pretty common, I thought, well, I don't think I'm stable. I don't think I really need my medication anymore. And I privately just stopped taking it, and I became very manic. You know, buying 2 of every vegetable in the grocery store, just the craziness of mania. And then, you know, that shifted into a really horrible depression, and I went back on my medication and learned, like, oh, I guess I do need this. So I'm not, you know, I It can be hard to know, like, you know, I've been on medication. You know, sometimes I have incredibly, you know, productive periods and highly energized periods. Are they manic periods, or are they just like really productive periods? You know, I don't know. But they're not self-destructive, and they're not getting in the way of me being a good person or a good mother. So,
which we know that you really are. So,
you've
been doing wonderful as a mother, as a wife, Lizzie. So, and it just does not define you. You've been so public about this struggle in your life, and I'm just wondering, has there been any negative effects from you going so public?
I don't really know. You know, it's like, are there jobs that I didn't get because somebody read that I was bipolar and decided not, oh, I don't want to deal with that person? It's definitely possible. When I was dating, like before I was married, I was conscious, like, oh, somebody might, you know, somebody might read about my book and decide, oh, I don't want to date her. And I guess I felt like, well, in terms of the dating thing, I felt like, look, if you're not sophisticated and compassionate enough to understand this stuff, then I don't really need to date you. And then professionally, you know, I just don't know. It's entirely possible that I've lost opportunities because of this, but clearly I've also gained opportunities because of it. You know, I got to write a book at a very young age, and I traveled the country and did speaking engagements, you know, in my 20s and 30s, and, you know, it was all because I was a writer, not because I had bipolar disorder, but it has given me a lot. It hasn't just taken away. So I don't know if there are risks. I don't know if there are risks for people being open, and I think it might depend on what you do professionally, and it definitely depends on what kind of community you come from. So, you know, if I was my grandfather, who's passed away, who had bipolar disorder, he was an orthopedic surgeon, and he never disclosed that he had bipolar disorder because he didn't want anyone to be anxious about who their surgeon was, and it was obviously a different time, too. If I were a pilot, maybe I would feel differently. I don't know.
Right.
But I'm like a writer, you know, living in New York City. You know, part of a liberal, progressive community. So there isn't as much risk to being open, coming from my background, and that's a privilege.
Right. Well, you know that there are symptoms, I want my listeners to know, of bipolar in teens, that sometimes it can be very confusing.
Yeah.
They can have ADHD, anxiety disorder, they could be on substance abuse.
Yeah.
And that really could present a very confusing picture to a psychiatrist.
Yeah.
And many times it could take years before someone is diagnosed properly. Because of that, you know, confusion. People may think that the anxiety and the drug abuse, you know, the ADD, something's personality disorder, but in fact, it could be bipolar, and that's why it's a good idea to get an evaluation as early as possible, not to waste time by not getting the right treatment. Right?
I completely agree. I think it can be very confusing for individuals and for their parents and loved ones, because it can look like the behavior can look like different, come from different sources. And, you know, a lot of the times it's not uncommon for people with bipolar disorder to also have substance use, you know, disorders, be alcoholic, because they're self-medicating on some level. The earlier the better. I mean, that is one way to look at my own life, which is that, you know, I dealt with it. My family dealt with it. We dealt with it when I was 17, 18. And now, because I dealt with it then, I have a pretty stable and interesting and fulfilling life as an adult. So if you delay getting evaluated and getting onto some kind of course for healing, then more damage is happening. And damage is happening inside your brain and to your relationships and in your community. And it's harder to recover if you've spent more time being damaged and being damaging. So it really is a good idea. And there's nothing you have to commit to. I mean, it's very hard to seek help for yourself or for a loved one. So I don't want to minimize how difficult it can be. But getting in there early, starting the conversation early, is incredibly important.
Right, and there's bipolar 1 and bipolar 2, which we're not going to get into, the mood swings, you know, there's so many hypomania and
yep.
You know, there's so many different issues to evaluate when seeing a psychiatrist. They can then differentiate between one or the other. And the most important message out there that I'd like to get out there is that, like you said, the earlier the better to evaluate with a good psychiatrist so that you keep the illness from escalating. And that's something really that we need to consider, that when it does get worse, it can get out of control and it hurts the relationships,
yeah.
Like you said. I'm just wondering, Lizzie, you're a parent now. You have three beautiful children, a wonderful, caring, loving husband. And has that changed how you view your own parents and how maybe they handled your struggles with mental illness when you were younger?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's nothing like parenthood to make you look at your parents with fresh eyes, right? I think my parents did certain things really well, and then there were other things that they struggled with. And my father had depression, and he didn't deal with his own depression until I was diagnosed. So it was a kind of my own recovery propelled him into recovery. But oftentimes I think about my father, who was very depressed when I was growing up. And I just remember him either being angry or being asleep in our house. And sometimes when I'm exhausted and irritable, I think about him and think about how hard it would be to parent if I was depressed. I mean, it's already hard enough, right?
Right.
But how
right.
hard
sure
it would
is.
Be if
yes,
I was
sure
severely
is.
Depressed. So yep. I have a lot of compassion for him.
Yeah.
And
for all parents, Lizzie.
And for all parents,
we need to have
totally.
Compassion for all parents because, like you said, it's anxiety-ridden these days. And parenting is very difficult, especially when you're struggling with somebody with anxiety or bipolar, depression, any mental health issue. Well, Lizzie, we're running out of time. And I want to wish you all the best of health always. And thank you for being so brave and writing this book and coming on even 20 years later to share your story.
Well,
thank you
so much for having me. And I'm wishing you the very best, too, with your own life and with all of the work you do with families. Thank you again.
Thank you. And we'll be in touch again soon. And I'd like to wish everyone a very good evening, a wonderful Shabbos, and always remember, hang in, hold on, and hug tight. And if you need a referral, call MASC, 718-758-0400. Thank you, Lizzie, and have a good night.
KZN, Talk Line Communications Network Radio, America's number one Jewish program.